Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's a Food Friday, and we're going down south today, down home to mouth-watering Dixie Dining. Oh, yeah. You know, we have a legend in the studio today who can give you a few pointers on whipping up some of that good old comfort food. Jasper Alexander is the chef and co-owner of Hattie's Restaurant at Saratoga Springs, named Best Southern and Soul Food in the Region by Metroland for the last 12 years. He is a Culinary Institute of America grad and has worked in famous kitchens in New York and in Seattle. He also beat Bobby Flay in a chicken frying contest on national TV. But who's counting? Jasper Alexander, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much, Ray.
You know, it's, well, first of all, let me give you the number, 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org, or tweet us, WAMC Radio. Use the hashtag VoxPop, or go to Facebook, facebook.com, obviously, /WAMC Radio, and we have a VoxPop post there. But the number is 1-800-348-2551. Yeah, there was general excitement when it was discovered that you were on the show today.
You know, it's nice to know I can still generate a buzz,
well,
suppose.
Well, you know, and I generally don't know who's on until about an hour before. But other staff members told me before that, so.
Well, it was a little bit of a chance. I was fishing the last couple of days with my son in a lake in the Adirondacks where we got flown in. And so when Jessica called me to ask if I could be on the show, I said yes, with one reservation, that barring weather or something, we might not get out. And
yeah,
if I don't show, you won't know until I don't show.
Well, I could do one of those monologue shows that are so popular, if that's the case. Number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. Zach the engineer is staring in the window, and so is producer Jessica Blaustein Marshall. The difference between the two, aside from the obvious ones, Zach is not allowed in. Jessica, on the other hand, is allowed in. And Jasper Alexander, what did you bring today?
We brought a bunch of stuff today. So we got a big variety of sandwiches that I brought in, as well as some chicken and some hush puppies. But we have a, from the downtown store on our brunch menu, I brought in a sandwich that we put on the menu about, oh, 6-8 months ago, and it's been a real hit. And Zach did sneak in for a bit of the bacon that's on it, but it's a...
Oh, he did, eh?
He did.
You're fired, Malloy.
We make some English muffin bread first, and then this sandwich is an egg sandwich, and it's got, so obviously, a couple of fried eggs on it, American cheese, some caramelized bacon, and avocado, and it's absolutely delicious and has been a huge hit. And then we've got a shrimp poor boy from the Chicken Shack out in Wilton.
Wow.
We've got a fried chicken sandwich, which is a sandwich that we first started at the track and then has gained so much fame and notoriety at the track that we sort of built this quick service restaurant around it in some respects. And that's some fried chicken thighs, boneless thighs, and then it has our Cajun coleslaw on it on a toasted Kaiser roll. And then we have the grilled chicken sandwich from the Chicken Shack as well, which is a brined chicken breast that we brine in garlic and salt and sugar and rosemary and thyme and sage. And then we put lettuce and tomato and sort of a white barbecue sauce on it, which is it's a mayonnaise-based barbecue sauce as opposed to a tomato-based barbecue sauce.
Can you tell us what's in it, or is it proprietary?
Yeah, no. It's
Jess, pull up a chair. Relax.
No, I share. This is, you know, there's nothing. We're not inventing anything new. You know, with maybe the exception of molecular gastronomy, you know, nothing is new anymore. So I share everything.
Okay.
So it's cider vinegar, sugar, mayonnaise, some spices, and that's really about it.
So the cider vinegar doesn't make the mayonnaise separate.
No. It just gives it a little tang. You know, gives it a little zip on the end, and it's great for basting onto the chicken. So, you know, we've got some hush puppies as well with some honey butter.
Yeah, and those hush puppies don't look like the kind that you get at the chain outlet.
No, these look substantial. They are substantial.
And they're caloric.
They're big golf ball size hush puppies.
Yeah.
The honey butter is a nice addition to those. And, you know, they've got fresh grated hush puppy as a corn and onion fritter, essentially. So it's cornmeal and flour and corn and grated onion
and
salt and baking powder and sugar and...
Oh boy,
delicious!
That's a really good way for me to start the show. Now, you know, it's funny. Southern food. I grew up around here. Southern food. Never was on the radar at all.
There's not a ton up here. It's actually really entering into a heyday right now, and obviously less so up in the Northeast and down South. But you know, some of the hottest chefs in the country right now are sort of bringing back these historic. You know, it's one of the oldest regional cuisines out there. It's been it's got a lot of influences that make it particularly interesting. And the South has historically had a very broad variety of ingredients. And, you know, there's a couple of chefs and restaurants down south that are really some of the best guys going right now.
The Hush Puppy is amazing.
Good.
Really amazing. Well, let's go to the phones and we'll talk about something that's been a mystery to me because we didn't have it very much in my household, frying chicken. Let's go to Dane in Saratoga. You're on first.
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
It's going well.
So I'm calling. I have a quick question, and I'm in a poor service area, so I'll be quick. When I fry chicken, even if I get the oil really hot, sometimes the breading falls off.
Mm-hmm.
It, like, crumbles away. And I love Hattie's delicious, crispy chicken. The skin, you know, it comes off, but it doesn't fall off.
Right.
Like my chicken does. So tell me your secret. How do you get the breading and the deliciousness to stay with the chicken at least long enough to get it onto the plate?
Sure. So, you know, really for anything to stick to something else, there's got to be some moisture there. So, you know, at Hattie's, we don't use any buttermilk. It's a sort of a brine that we make with spices and water. And so when we bring over that chicken from that brine into the flour, you've got to bring enough moisture with that chicken, you know, be it water or buttermilk or whatever you're going to use, that it actually really makes the flour or whatever you're using to bread, which could be anything. I mean, you can, you know, it doesn't have to be flour. But there's got to be enough moisture for that product, that breading product, to stick to the protein. And then the oil should be hot, but not crazy hot, you know, so it needs to be,
okay.
You know, you need to have a thermometer and make sure that the oil, and usually if you're doing it in your house, you're going to have to buy a candy thermometer because most thermometers don't go up to over the 300 range. So you want to use a candy thermometer and you want to have it, you know, somewhere between 3 1/4 and 350. Much hotter than 350 is going to be too hot. And, you know, your chicken will end up being, you know, too dark on the outside and not done on the inside,
yeah,
which is not what you're looking for.
Yep.
And, you know, those two things, you know, go for lower temperature is better than, you know, too low is too high. You can always fry it a little bit longer. But if the outside of your chicken is getting too dark, and sometimes if the oil is really hot, too, it'll just, that shock of going in the oil will just sort of push the flour right off it. And
yeah,
we lose a lot of flour, you know, on our chicken as well. It's you know, we have to filter the fryers, you know, at least 2-3 times a day to get that flour out of the fryer, or else it messes up the fryer and over the long haul.
Dane, thanks.
Excellent.
A lot. Your signal was good throughout the entire call. Number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. Yeah, you know, Jasper, your chicken is legendary.
Well, thank you.
And so the spices, I know that you say everything's out there, but the spices are proprietary. You won't tell everybody what you do,
well,
right?
Well, we will be coming out. We've got a cookbook in the works that we're just got picked up, and so it's going to be out there soon. But it's a mixture of spices that we blend at the restaurants, and you know, the biggest thing with cooking in general, especially, you know, on a professional level, you know, the most basic tenet that we have as cooks and chefs is to season the food properly. And so what I see most people making the mistake of is just not putting enough.
You and I are on the same boat.
Yeah, I mean, it looks, you know, if someone were to watch me season a steak, you know, for instance, they'd probably, their jaw would drop at how much actual salt goes on it. But, you know, a lot of it comes off on the grill or the pan or whatever, and you need to have a proper amount of seasoning to make the, you know, all the natural flavors of the food come out. I mean, and usually, you know, a home cook will undershoot that by about half, you know, so.
Not in my house. Oh, the wife loves the spices. But, you know, as far as steak goes,
yep,
you always get this feeling that the purists say, oh, nothing but a little bit of salt on a steak.
Yeah, no,
but you just lay it on there.
Yeah,
huh?
No, I think that's, I would not agree with that. You know, there's, you know, obviously the best product, you got to start with the best product you can. I mean, that's, you know, I think especially all the attention that's being put on, you know, local and farm to table type cuisine is really sort of bringing that to the forefront now, that where you get your product, your raw product from matters, and the quality of it to begin with matters. And it does matter a great deal. In fact, it's the most important thing. But then you've got to treat it with the care and respect after that. And part of that is putting enough salt on it to bring out all its natural flavors, because that's what salt does.
You know, you talk about using a lot, and you must go through an awful lot of chicken every week.
Thousands.
How do you keep the quality high when you're cranking out volume like that?
We deal with a few chicken producers, and we're in contact with them all the time, and we make sure that the product is not only consistent but fresh and a consistent size. That's a big thing with fried chicken, is and that's sometimes what people run into issues in the grocery stores now. You know, especially with all the, you know, hormone pumped chicken and stuff that's out there, it's a size thing, and people, when they're buying chicken, the consumer, or at least the producers, assume that the consumer wants this, you know, giant 7-pound chicken. Well, you know, no chicken's supposed to be 7 pounds. That's crazy. So, you know, for frying chicken, we need, you know, chickens that are somewhere between 2¾ and 3½ pounds at the most. Anything bigger than 3½ pounds really doesn't cook right. You know, the insides will tend to be underdone, while the outsides will tend to be overdone. Just because the pieces are too big.
Regardless of what temperature you start.
Regardless of what temperature
you start. All right, we have a great show here. Jasper Alexander of Hattie's Restaurant is our guest. Number to call is 1-800-348-2551. By golly, there's a fried chicken sandwich that has my name on it. We better try it after this.
Support for WAMT comes from Terrapin Red Bistro, serving mac and cheese, quesadillas, natural beef burgers, tapas, original cocktails, craft beer, and local wine, lunch, dinner, and late night. TerrapinRestaurant.com. Radio Woodstock's Craft Brew Boogaloo, Saturday, May 23rd, Cantine Field, Saugerties, over 150 craft beers from 75 breweries, farm-to-table food, live music, and artisans. CraftBrewBoogaloo.com. Monticello, licensed real estate broker, 80 Davis Avenue, Albany, now offering 170 Holmesdale in Albany's Buckingham Pond neighborhood, 3 beds, 2 full baths, modern mid-century ranch, 170holmesdale.com for details. The Open Door Bookstore, Schenectady, New York, presenting Jessica Loy, signing her book, Weird and Wild Animal Facts, tomorrow, 1 to 2:30 p.m., opendoor-bookstore.com. And Barry Price Architecture, since 1996, specializing in buildings that integrate modernism and sustainability with regional materials and aesthetics. BarryPriceArchitecture.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Food Friday. Ray Graff here. Number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Rosa and Troy, hang on. You're next. Jasper Alexander of Hattie's Restaurant in Saratoga Springs, our guest. Just had a bite of the fried chicken sandwich. It's really, really good, man. What's on it?
Not much, actually. It's one of those sandwiches that we came up with when we first went to the track. You know, at the restaurant, we serve a half a chicken primarily. And so when the possibility of going into the track came up, you know, I was thinking, okay, this is a concession. It's mostly lunch. Half a chicken's probably going to be too much, you know, but 3 pieces might be good. And if it was 3 pieces, it should probably be the breast, a leg, and a wing, because that's kind of a nice portion. It's a little bit of white meat, a little bit of dark meat. And then there was a question of, all right, well, if that's the case, what are we going to do with a thigh? And so we decided we'd try boning out a thigh and making a sandwich with a thigh. And we all sort of sat around looking at each other in the kitchen thinking, man, this is a really good sandwich. We should just roll with this. And the customers at the track agreed with us, and it rapidly, you know, the sales of the sandwich were equaling the sales of the fried chicken. And we had a hit, and it's just our boneless fried chicken thigh. And then Cajun coleslaw, which we serve at the restaurant in the summertime. We serve it at Wilton all the time, and it's also a staple on our soft-shell crab. I was going to bring some soft-shell crabs down, we're right at the beginning of the season of those, and we sell a lot of those. The sales of those actually rival the fried chicken when they're in season.
Really?
Yeah, we sell a ton of them. But they didn't get in yet, so I couldn't bring them in.
I'm not complaining. I tell you, that's a pretty hearty sandwich for a track.
It's a big sandwich. Yeah, it's no joke. And so we have 2 sizes at the restaurant. We have the Big Daddy, and then we have the Junior. And the Big Daddy has 2 thighs on it, and then the Junior only has one. It's a two-hander for sure.
Absolutely. All right, let's go back to the phones and Rosa and Troy. Rosa, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Hi, Jasper.
How are you, Rosa?
I love Southern food. I'm lucky. My mother is from Georgia, so I learned to make a lot of soul food.
Oh, fantastic.
But I was recently in Georgia, and they have a new thing, and I don't know if Hattie makes this, fried pickles.
We have done fried pickles in the past. I do do them every now and again. They're good. They're fun.
How do you make them? What kind of pickles do you use?
So, I mean, that's really up to you. I mean, that's the fun thing about food in general is you should do what you like. So, you could use a dill pickle or a sweet pickle. Typically, they're dill pickles. I like the pickles sliced on the round so that they're more like a chips personally. But
that's
you see
how
out
I had
there,
them.
Yeah, you can see them out there in Spears as well. So like anything, you know, there's a basic frying setup, which is, you know, they call it a three-stage breading. So you need to have the pickle. You need to put it in something like flour would work very well first. And then into an egg wash. And the flour will help the egg wash stick. And then from the egg wash, you put it in a final coating. I would recommend cornmeal or a mixture of cornmeal. Or you could use masa, which is typically a Spanish cornmeal. And then you just fry it, and you want to fry it at about 350 degrees until they're crispy.
Like the same way you would fry green fried tomatoes, or
exactly the same way. You could deep fry them.
Okay.
Yeah, you could deep fry them, or you could do them in a pan and like just shallow fry them, so where the oil comes up, you know, about halfway up the product.
You just want to
be careful, and they're going to cook quickly, so you want to stay on top of them and make sure the oil's not too hot.
I want to give it a try. I want to open a restaurant and call it a fried pickle.
Nice. Thanks, Rosa.
All right. Well, thank you. I'm enjoying your show. Thank you.
Appreciate
the
call. Now, when you fry a pickle, should it be refrigerated?
The pickle?
Yeah.
It doesn't care.
Really?
No.
Wouldn't that make it cook?
It's already cooked. So, I mean, you know, you've taken your cucumber and you've already pickled it. So it's already, you know, texturally not much is going to change in the pickle. It's already been the nature of the cucumber has been changed into the pickle with the pickling process. So
yeah, but I mean, wouldn't that make it less likely that you overcook the pickle?
If it were cold?
Yeah.
No, because it's going to be fair. It's going to cook very fast. You know, with something that's bigger.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
so, like, you know, that's why they tell you take out your roast and let it sit on the counter for an hour before you cook it, or let your steaks come to room temperature before you cook it. That and that sort of thing. But something that's so small as that, the time, and, you know, letting it be at a different temperature is not going to make too much of a difference.
You know what would be good with this chicken, fried chicken sandwich?
Some beer. You know what?
What do you got?
I brought beer.
Uh-huh.
Just in case.
What do you got?
we have two beers today from Abita Brewery, which is our top-selling brewery at Hattie's. It's from Abita Springs in Louisiana.
I've not heard of this brewery.
No, it's a great brewery. If you haven't, you should seek them out because their whole line is quite good. And then it's a rather large line of beers that they make. And I brought two of their more popular beers and two of our more popular beers. It's the Turbo Dog, which is a dark lager. So it's a... Flavor profile wise, it's pretty light on the palate.
Yeah.
But color wise, it's very dark.
Yeah,
so,
it looks dark.
There's a couple of beers like this out there. Black and Voodoo is another Louisiana dark lager. Guinness makes a dark lager now, but this one is particularly good. It's great for people who like a lighter beer, but also like to have a little bit higher maltiness in it. Obviously, this gets a little bit more malt in it. And then we also brought the Giacomo IPA.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a great IPA. Abita makes a couple of good ones. They make this, and they make another one called the Wrought Iron PDA, or IPA, which we sell as well. And they're both quite good. Abita is a really good brewery across the board.
You know, this sandwich, there's a little spice. It comes on.
That's the Cajun coleslaw, and it does give it a little bit of a backbone, offers a nice little crunch, and gives it a little snap. And, you know, sometimes, you know, you'd be surprised. You don't need, you know, if the ingredients going into it are good, it doesn't need that many to make it a whole and complete sandwich, you know. And that was one of these things that we sort of realized that, God, it doesn't take very many things to make a great, great sandwich.
And you've done it. And it goes well with this nice dark beer as well. Let's go to Cliff in Kingston. Cliff, you're on.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
We're doing well.
Have you guys ever tried, like, a fried chicken that's cooked with cornflakes?
I have not. I've heard of using cornflakes as a final breading for lots of things. I don't have much experience with it, but I could see how it would be good. I would say that you need to watch the sweetness because, you know, cornflakes, even though it's not a sweetened cereal per se, as in like Fruit Loops or something, it's still got quite a bit of sugar in it.
Yeah.
So that would make it brown quicker. But really anything, I mean, that's, you know, as far as the breading goes, you know, anything that you think might be good is worth giving a shot. You know, that's the...
Uh,
What about Lucky Charms?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. As long as we got some stars in there, some marshmallow stars.
Green clovers? I mean, yeah. Perfect. All right, Cliff.
Because years ago, my family and I were on vacation, and we stopped at this place in southern Connecticut, and it was called the Hobnob, and we had some fried chicken, and it was coated with cornflakes.
And was it good?
It wasn't overly sweet. It was delicious. It had a nice crunch to it.
Yeah. I mean, something like that, too, is going to hold its crunch. You know, it's a product that's meant to stand up to, you know, going in a bowl full of milk, so it's going to hold its crunch for a while.
Yeah.
And so why not, you know?
My mom's been baking it off and on.
Baking the fried chicken?
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, it's not really fried chicken, but...
My mom doesn't like to do much frying as far as, except with the fish. She'll fry the fish, but, and maybe fry up some sausage before she puts in the sauce for making spaghetti.
Yeah.
Sure, sure.
But,
I mean...
She likes to take the chicken and, you know, do the egg wash and the... some flour, but always with the cornflakes on the top.
Huh.
And puts it in the oven, and it always comes out great.
Yeah.
Has a nice crunch to it.
Yeah, if it's working, I'd stick with it.
Cliff, thanks a lot for the call. The number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. It's a Food Friday. We're joined today by Jasper Alexander of the famous Hattie's Restaurant in Saratoga Springs. The chicken has lived up to its reputation, and the beer is darn good. What is the brand?
It's Abita. So it's from Abita Springs. It's probably the biggest brewery in Louisiana. Dixie is another big one that's based right in New Orleans proper, which is actually right after Katrina. Their production of Dixie beer got almost halted to nothing because the city commandeered their spring for drinking water.
Oh,
so Dixie was hard to get for a couple of years, and we got very small allotments here and there. But Abita is outside of New Orleans proper, and it's a great brewery.
It's very tasty. It's not a heavy beer.
No, not at all.
It's dark.
It's got dark color, but it doesn't. You know, it's a lager, so it's a light and crisp. It's got a good hoppiness to it, but not too much, and it's a great beer.
So you guys are gearing up and getting ready in the next couple of months for the track, huh?
We got the track coming up. Before the track, we have our Crawfish Festival coming up. That's on the Monday of Memorial Day weekend, and that's a huge event. We fly in hundreds and hundreds of pounds of crawfish, and we do a big crawfish boil out downtown. We open up the alley, we bring in a band, and I'll probably bring in 600-700 pounds of crawfish.
That's something you don't, again... Growing up around here, crawfish was not really on the menu at home.
They're out there, but probably more go to fishing than to get put on the plate.
Yeah,
but that's a lot of fun. It's a huge turnout, and you know, it's fun doing something that's more traditionally found in the South up here for people up in the Northeast.
And people are receptive.
Oh, very receptive.
Yeah, and so how would you cook a crawfish and make it good?
So well, you got to get a good crawfish to start. That's key.
How do you know?
Well, typically you got to buy it from a producer. So, you know, if you go out to the creek behind your house, chances are it's not going to be the tastiest crawfish you've
ever seen
had.
A few that were a little sketchy in my time.
They're going to be a little muddy, as
yeah,
we say.
Yeah, exactly.
So I deal with a company in Louisiana that's all they do. And so we start talking. I gave them a call a couple of weeks ago to make sure that everything was looking good, and everything is looking good because we're kind of at the tail end of the season now.
Yeah.
And sometimes that means that they can be a little smaller, and sometimes that can mean that they can be a little weaker, so that they might not.
What do you mean weaker?
Meeker. Well, crawfish are you know, one of those creatures that's been around for millions of years, survived lots of horrible disasters, but take them out of their element and they don't like to live very long.
So, okay. So you get them live?
I get them live. Okay. Yeah. So they come in and we got to make sure that they're in good shape to make the trip, basically. I don't want to show up and, you know, get 600 pounds of crawfish flown in and have 300 pounds of it be dead when it gets to my door.
Could,
it's
could
24
they just put
hours.
Dead, I mean, ones on ice and send them up?
They could, but those kind of things go bad pretty fast.
Really?
So, yeah, you got to be careful.
All right, so how do you cook them?
So what you do is you take you make a crab boil, so lots of spices. So you put in onions and garlic and cayenne pepper and garlic pepper.
Right in the water?
Garlic salt and right in the water. And make essentially some wine we put in there too, and so essentially we make a very spicy court bouillon. And a court bouillon is generally a mixture of aromatics, wine, and water.
Okay,
and it's used for poaching fish. It's used for lots of different things. And so we boil that all in, and then you boil the crawfish for about 10 minutes or so, give or take. And then you let it soak for another 10 minutes in another pot full of more of that brine.
Okay.
So that all that spicy brine gets into the crawfish. And then we serve it, you know, we serve a pound of crawfish with a piece of corn and a potato. And people just get on paper plates and they just get, you know, big piles of, you know, they'll order it by the pound. And they'll, some people, I have one woman that I ran into the other day. She's good for 20 pounds, you know.
No way. Herself?
Herself.
What, do you wheel her out of there? How do you get her out of the place?
She's a crawfish eating machine. She's great. She knows who she is. She's listening.
All right. Sorry, lady.
And I've ordered extra 20 pounds just for her.
All right. Fair enough. Let's go back to the phones and to David in New Paltz. David, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Thanks for doing a good job there.
Thank you.
I'm asking about shish kebab.
Ah.
Is there a southern type of meat on a stick that can be recommended? How to make it?
Any meat on a stick's a good thing, as far as I'm concerned. But what do you like to eat generally?
Well, I like lamb.
Okay. As far as any sort of flavor profiles that are specific to southern cooking, as far as shish kebab. There isn't anything, you know, per se in the same sense that there's like, you know, the speedies from the Utica area or the Syracuse area. You know, I know that that's real popular, but if you like lamb, I would start with that. And then, I think some things that go well with lamb that probably aren't too typical. Actually, anchovy goes very well with lamb if it's used sparingly.
Really?
So a little garlic and maybe just a couple of anchovy fillets and some olive oil and some rosemary and sage and rub that on and let it sit for a day or two and then skewer them up. You could use leg of lamb would work. That's probably the most economical choice for a shish kebab. But, you know, you could also... you know, get a loin or something of that nature, or blade steaks are quite good. The key with lamb is just letting it marinate long enough, and cooking it over, you know, nice high heat. I would, you know, if you have a charcoal grill, you know, charcoal is nicer than gas in most instances. Although I myself have a gas grill because I don't really have the time to deal with charcoal when I'm grilling, but you won't get that same sort of smoky flavor from charcoal or from a gas grill as you would from charcoal.
Okay.
All right, David. Thank you very much for the call. That's funny. So you have a gas grill at home.
I do.
We went to charcoal a couple of years ago. Actually last year. And it was the best thing that we have done.
Yeah.
It takes a while to get the grill going.
That's okay. I mean, my dad was a great, great master of the grill, and he always had charcoal grills. And I would like to, you know, all things being equal, I would prefer to use a charcoal grill. But when it comes time to... sort of spacing out the time and for me, I gotta go with gas because
you gotta leave at least an hour and a half for that.
You need the extra time. And it's worth it. For those that have the time, it's definitely worth it. I wish I did, but
you know, it's funny. We like to we just tried when we were making chicken at home, we brined it before we marinated it and then we put it on the grill. You mentioned one of your offerings today was brined chicken.
The grilled chicken sandwich at Hattie's Chicken Shack is a brined chicken breast.
How long do you brine it?
They're about 24 hours.
Yeah, that's what we... Yeah.
And it's, you know, we do it a slightly weaker than you might do a typical brine because, you know, when we're talking about an ongoing prep situation, so I don't know if it's, you know, we never have more than a day... you know, a day's worth of chicken brined ahead of time, but
right.
I don't know if it's going to go through in 4 hours or if it's going to go 12 hours. So I've got to sort of pull back on the brine because you can over-brine something.
You can.
Yeah.
How long is too long?
It depends on the salt ratio. So if you cut back the salt and sugar, so typically a brine recipe on average is a cup of sugar, and this is a real base. You can use this as a riffing point, but it's a cup of sugar and a cup of salt per gallon of liquid.
Okay.
So if you use that as a starting point, and that's good for most things for a day or so. However, if you're cutting your meat into smaller pieces, obviously that brine is going to work its way into the meat faster.
Yep.
If you're dealing with a larger bird, like say a turkey, when I brine my turkey for Thanksgiving, I brine it for 2-3 days.
Yeah.
So it really depends on the size, and it depends on what exactly you're brining. So a chicken breast will typically brine faster than, say, you know, a whole chicken. You know, obviously, and so you've just got to sort of use that as a baseline, and then vary it depending on what you're doing and how. But it's a great technique. It helps the meat retain moisture, especially a cut of meat that is less fatty and doesn't have as much flavor as, you know, say you know, something like a, you know, a chuck or something, something that has, you know, something that has a lot of tissue and fat and marbling in it is going to have naturally more flavor than something that doesn't. And so the brining is a great way to put in flavor.
Now, I don't know if it's true, but they tell me that it also breaks down the muscle a little bit.
To an extent. I mean, to an extent. I mean, that's, you know, that's sort of a little bit of a misnomer, like that searing something in a pan actually seals in the juices.
Yeah.
That doesn't actually happen. But,
okay.
But it does. It does change the proteins a little bit.
All right, we'll get back to the phones in a minute at 1-800-348-2551. But one more question about brining.
Yep.
Now, we have done turkeys the last 2 years.
Yes.
You said you do 2 or 3 days. How do you make sure that turkey isn't going bad by day 2 or 3?
Well, I buy a good turkey. So I buy typically a free range turkey that was, you know, walking around a few days before I get it. So that's part of it. But I mean, most meat is going to last for a number of days.
Is
especially
it, do you keep it cold when?
Oh yeah, yeah.
In the brine.
In the brine, and I keep it in the refrigerator.
Oh,
yeah,
you do?
Yeah,
okay,
absolutely.
Well,
so I put it in
that's
a five.
The trick.
You know, I get about a 20-pound bird. I shove it into a 5-pound bucket. I pour the brine up over it. I put the lid on it, and I put it in the refrigerator.
We'll put it in ours in a. Just a big cooler that we line with
ice. Yeah.
With ice, yeah. And we put it in a brining bag, basically,
sure.
Inside this thing.
Sure, yeah.
All right, let's take a break, Mr. Zach. 1-800-348-2551. We're joined by Jasper Alexander, chef and co-owner of Hattie's Restaurant in Saratoga. We'll be back.
Support for WAMC comes from Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Over 300 flavors of handcrafted, dairy and dairy-free ice creams, cakes, hot fudge, and more. Harold's.com. Spicer Art Conservation, since 1995. Art conservation and long-term collection care of objects, textiles, paper, and upholstery. Services for organizations and private owners. SpicerArt.com. Kingsway Community, Schenectady, New York. Offering a continuum of care and services to area seniors since 1975, including assisted living and more, caring in the family tradition, 518-393-8800. Barnstars Antiques at Rhinebeck, a Memorial Day weekend tradition, now under new management. 2 days, 120 new and returning exhibitors, Saturday and Sunday, May 23rd and 24th, barnstar.com. And Wagoner Seltrick, PLLC, providing legal counsel to businesses throughout New York on business and securities law, commercial litigation, and estate planning. WagonerSelchick.com.
Well, for all the staff members who are waiting for the leftovers from the show, there are no leftovers, I'm sorry to say. All right, Zach, there are a few things left. Number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop. We talk Southern cooking today with Jasper Alexander. And during the break, I tried your breakfast sandwich. You better tell me what's in this, because it's pretty darn good, yeah.
It's the English muffin bread, which we make in-house, so that's a big part of it to start. And then it's the caramelized bacon is kind of the star of the show. We sprinkle our rib rub that we use to season our ribs over the bacon and bake it. And so obviously, like a lot of ribs, it has a lot of brown sugar in it and a lot of spices. And so it's a little hot and a little sweet, and it works really well with the bacon.
Yeah.
And just makes it kind of sticky and gooey and delicious.
Really, really good.
And then the avocado is a nice counterpoint to that bacon, kind of settles out the heat and the sweetness of the bacon. And then, you know, I think that everything has its place. And while I'm not a huge fan of American cheese, it has its place. And in this sandwich is one of the places where it fits in pretty well.
It's a good place.
Yeah, it just kind of has the right gooiness to it gives that right sort of, you know, American, you know, backbone for an egg sandwich.
This is your own creation?
We did make that up. Yep.
It's pretty darn good. Now, you make the bread yourself.
We make the bread.
That's an art as well.
We make all our bread. We make all our biscuits, all our cornbread. There's very, very few shortcuts at Hattie's, and bread isn't one of them. So we make the English muffin bread, we make the biscuits, the cornbread, the beignets, the pie doughs, all that stuff.
Yeah. So this is available all day long?
No, that is available on Saturday and Sunday from 9 until 2 when we do brunch at Hattie's.
Can I just get the caramelized bacon by the pound?
You can.
Just
you
a
can.
Plate of it.
Yeah, just a big pile of it. Yep.
Yeah, man. All right, let's go to Fred and Wine and Skill. Fred, you're on.
Hey, Ray, was that B.B. King you had going there?
That was actually Eric Clapton with Derek and the Dominoes. Have you ever loved a woman?
Yes, okay. Jasper, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. I had a buddy from the South who first time I ever had blackened swordfish, but it was delicious. He had it all coated up, threw it on a dry iron skillet, and had a flame underneath it. He did it outside, and it just burned it. I think he had it on for like 5 minutes, including both sides.
Sure.
But the thing that he had with it that was so good, it was succotash, he told me. But my recollection is dimmed, but I recall that it was like... that it was corn and lima beans, maybe?
Correct. So succotash...
But it was the spices that were in it, which is what really made it. And I was wondering if you could kind of go over if there is any traditional succotash spices that go in it?
Not per se, to my knowledge. I mean, succotash is you've got it. It's a southern mixed vegetable. It almost always has corn, tomatoes, and lima beans in it. Typically, something that you'll see in the summer when those things are at the height of their freshness.
It was delicious after hearing all Sylvester the Cat saying,
"Yeah,
succotash." That's right.
But he also had some spices in it though that made it a little bit warmer. You know.
I mean, my guess is he probably put in some cayenne. Obviously, it's hard for me to comment on what somebody else did. But I would, if I were doing it, and we do it in the summertime. It's got salt and pepper. Some fresh herbs, usually some thyme, and maybe a little bit of sage, and it's really about getting the fresh corn and the fresh tomatoes and the lima beans. You know, typically pole beans like that aren't quite as popular up here as they are down south. So the likelihood of finding some fresh lima beans in the store is probably fairly unlikely. But even a good quality frozen lima bean will substitute for something like that. And they're great, and you can spin that a million different ways too. Really anything as long as it's got corn and tomatoes in it is generally called a succotash.
All right.
Yeah, it was very, very good.
Thanks, Fred.
Thank you.
Have a good one. Let's go over to Mary in East Hampton, Mass. Mary, you're on.
Hey, Jasper, so great that you're cooking at Hattie's. I'm a former waitress from there.
Oh, fantastic.
Hattie was still around. Back when I was a college kid, and I was wondering if you're still using her recipe for fried chicken.
Oh yeah, yep, absolutely. It's what it's based on. My wife and I purchased a restaurant about 15 years ago now. And we've been going strong with it ever since. And we've still got some of the same employees that when I was there. I don't know if you remember Ernie. Do you remember Ernie?
Yeah.
Yeah. He only stopped working about 4 or 5 years ago. So there was some great continuity between, you know, what had been and what is now with my wife and I. And so we are carrying on the tradition as best as we are able.
Oh, that's great. I want to get up there for the crawfish
festival.
Oh,
you should. It's a lot of fun. You know, we've obviously restaurants need to stay fresh. So, you know, they need to stay current and fresh. So we've had to, you know, change things. But it's an interesting exercise as a restaurant owner to be sort of stewards of what's done in the past, especially with a special restaurant like Hattie's, as well as keeping it current and hip. So
that's a legacy.
It's now, been an interesting challenge.
Are you still doing flour? All she did was flour with salt and pepper and cayenne, as I recall. Is that what you
do? More or less, yeah. I mean, it's a pretty basic. People think that there's some amazing trick to it. It's really more about technique than it is anything else.
Right.
You know, you can give two people the same recipe and get two entirely different things. So it's really about paying attention to the small details as you move along the process.
Great. Okay. Well, see you at the Crossfish Festival.
All right. Perfect. Looking forward to it.
Thanks, Mary. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. That's kind of cool. She worked there a long time ago.
Yeah, it's neat. You know, that happens. It happened a lot when we first took over the restaurant, and I think, unfortunately, people are sort of aging out. And so it happens less and less. But it's always really special when somebody comes in that had worked there in the past. I mean, restaurants generally don't last as long as Hattie's has lasted. I mean, I think 78 years now, something like that.
It's a good run.
1938. It's a heck of a run for a restaurant. And a unique set of circumstances that I think have enabled it to last that long, as well as Saratoga being a fairly special place. And it's really, You know, it's fun when you get somebody in there that worked there years ago, and you know, every time I meet somebody, I sort of am crossing my fingers and hoping that they're going to have an enjoyable experience and kind of bring back fond memories and not think that we've flubbed the whole thing up. But
what about old-time customers from way
back? That's something that's, that is a never-ending, interesting experience because, you know, people's palates are perfect, and,
yeah.
and people's palate history and memory are also perfect.
Uh-huh. So you don't sound a little bitter there.
Okay. Not at all, but it's interesting that you know, I'll get, you know, people that come in that say that the you know, the chicken is just how they remembered it 55 years ago, or somehow I've done them this great disservice by changing something.
So some people say, hey, it's not like it was?
But no, it very, very rarely, you know, everything happens at least once, so
yeah.
you know, you can't bat a thousand all the time.
Still, it must be nice to have someone come in and say, "Boy, I still love it."
People, that is what we hear most of the time, and it is very, very encouraging, and always makes us feel good to hear it.
We're joined today by Jasper Alexander, chef and co-owner of Hattie's Restaurant in Saratoga Springs. Let's go to Sue in West Hurley. Hiya, Sue.
Hi. That was great. I love the person who called right before me. That says a lot for the restaurant. But
thank you.
As I was pulling into my driveway after I went to my favorite place, Friday is my day off from work, and I did my shopping. And on the way home, I always say to myself, what should I treat myself to tonight? But I heard Ray talk about caramelized bacon.
Mm-hmm.
I thought,
oh, God, it's good.
Eggs are my favorite dinner meal. So what is caramelized bacon?
Oh, boy. You're in for it now, Sue.
Oh, I'm absolutely going to get some bacon. But what's the difference between that and fried bacon?
Oh. So the caramelized bacon, we spread on a mixture of brown sugar and spices, essentially. So,
kind of like what you were just talking about.
Exactly. So, you could buy a rib rub or something of that nature, and then add a little bit of brown sugar to it, or you could make your own. And almost any sort of barbecue book or anything like that would have a number of different recipes for a basic barbecue rub. But if you did, you know, a little bit of cayenne or Cajun seasoning, if cayenne is too hot straight, and some brown sugar and some onion powder and a little garlic salt and some dried thyme and sage and rosemary and that sort of things. Those are the type of things.
So it's just about putting my own recipe onto the bacon?
Yeah, well, you can...
You need sugar, though, right?
Yeah, you got to have the sugar. You got to have the brown sugar.
Oh, absolutely,
that's the key. You got to have the brown sugar. So almost any of those...
Just like when I do the barbecue sauce for my chicken.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, exactly. So if you're familiar with that, and if you've ever done sort of a rib rub of sorts or any sort of barbecue rub, you could spread that right on the bacon and then just bake it in the oven. Just don't do it in a pan. Bake it in the oven. That'll give you the time that's needed for
like
the caramel.
400 degrees or whatever?
If it's a convection oven, I'd probably do it at 325, 350.
A regular oven.
If it's a conventional, no fan, I'd probably do it at about 350 then for, you know, until it's done to your liking.
Okay, and so it's pretty much like my barbecue sauce recipe, only putting it on the bacon and putting it in the oven.
Right, but it's dry. It's a dry spice recipe, not a liquid
dry.
Recipe.
Yeah,
And Sue, it's about the greatest thing ever invented.
Oh, I'm about to go to my... I just came home from my Best Market, buying all my stuff. Friday's my day off.
Yeah.
Make my food for the week. And when I pulled into the driveway, I heard about caramelized bacon.
Yeah.
I'm about to go out to get the bacon.
Another satisfied customer. Hey, Sue,
I'm
great.
I'm very satisfied. And thank you. And, Ray, I have to just say, because Friday is my day off, I always plan going into Kingston, where my market is, when you're on the air.
Oh, my gosh.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, and good luck with the caramelized bacon.
Yeah, good luck.
Oh, I'm sure I will eat it all.
Thanks,
Sue.
Bye. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Jasper Alexander of Hattie's Restaurant in Saratoga is our guest. So my friend Deanna Fox, who I don't know. Do you know her?
Yeah, absolutely.
So we did a pie show.
Uh-huh.
And I said, can you make bacon chocolate peanut butter pie? Which she did, but she put caramelized bacon on it.
Oh, she did.
And it was
that
still,
sounds
I still
delicious.
Haven't gotten the recipe out of it.
No.
Out of her.
She's not sharing?
No, but she better.
Yeah.
It was really, really good. And that was also another huge hit. As the food that you have made will be, whatever's left, at the end of the show.
We brought enough. I think we've got enough to share. We've got some beignets here still that we haven't dipped into, and the shrimp poor boy's lurking over there kind of lonely.
Yeah. Well, the breakfast sandwich so far, it's at the top of the list.
That's good.
It's really good stuff. So how many employees do you have over at Hattie's?
Between the two operations, we have about 50 year-round.
How do you keep quality control?
We've got a great team. We've got a really great group of people that really care, and they, you know, that really sums it up. They care, and it's hard to, we could not do it without them. It's hard to do anything without a good group of employees, as any business knows. And I think we've got a fantastic group of employees that really put their heart and soul into it every day, and they really care about the product that we're putting out. And you know, their success is our success, and we all get it done together.
But it must be tough. Now, I've talked to chefs on this program for quite a long time, and sort of about the intersection between business and the art that you do. So everything that comes out of Hattie's, whether you do it or not, has your stamp on it.
That is correct.
And so are there those times where somebody just doesn't get it and you say, well, this is not working out?
Yeah, there are. You know, and we look, I mean, of course, not everybody works out, but we look for what our effort is mainly is to put the right team of people together. So not everybody needs to have the same skill level as everybody else, and not everybody needs to have the same talents as everybody else, but it's how we are in aggregate together that makes us successful. And so we try to put the best team together that we can, and if, you know, one of the crews, be it the lunch crew or the dinner crew, even though it's you know, doesn't really work like a lunch dinner, you know, there's not that kind of segregation between the
right.
two crews. We really try to put the strongest team together, and fortunately, most of the time, we have a pretty darn strong team, and we don't have a very high turnover, which really helps. We're able to retain and keep our people, and that's huge. Not only just for continuity's sake, but it's less wear and tear on the whole, and you know, we're lucky in that respect, and we thank our employees for being as good as they are.
So what level of hands-on are you in the kitchen every night?
I'm at both places most every day at some point, back and forth. So I cook Saturday and Sunday brunches in the morning right now, because that's sort of one of the better fits for me, for my schedule personally, as well as for the restaurant. And then I'm at both restaurants at least once or twice throughout the day, almost every day, except for if I'm out of town or doing something like that. The crews in both restaurants are strong enough to where I don't feel like I absolutely have to, you know, if I miss a day, if something's going on, and, you know, with our kids, or we get thrown a curveball that I have to go do something and
fly
and
into the Adirondacks,
to go fishing, for instance, you know, I feel confident that, you know, nothing is going to fall apart.
Do you ever just show up and take a taste?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So that's the bottom line here.
Well, the expectations need to be clear, the standards need to be clear. And you know, you don't want cooking to be formulaic to the extent that it becomes sort of a cookie cutter pattern sort of a thing, but there needs to be some standards in place. And I think one of our sometimes we try to run it too loose. I mean, for years I was the only cook, and so I didn't have anything written down because I was the only one cooking it.
Right.
You know? And you know, I was doing all the batch cooking, I was doing all the line cooking, and doing all the ordering. And so, and me and one of my super long term employees, Mike, who's there now, getting it done. I mean, we were the only two there, and so we didn't need to have anything written down. But as time has progressed, and I've got other projects going on, and I've pulled myself out a little bit, you know, I realized that I had to sort of standardize things to the extent that the message could be translated on to other employees without necessarily me showing them how to do it.
That can't be that easy.
It's not easy making that transition, because you're used to sort of shooting from the hip and being the only guy, and then you sort of got to...
You get magic every now and then, this really worked.
Yeah, then you got to write it down and say, okay, well, this... And, you know, they can't tell what you're thinking or what your intentions are. They just need to know, you know, how to make it. And,
yeah.
So it's a different style, but you know, we're still going strong, so it's working.
Is it still fun for you, cooking?
Yeah, it is, absolutely. I still enjoy cooking. It's a tough career. The hours are long. It's an all-in sort of business every day. And my father was in the newspaper business, and we sort of had lots of conversations equating the two businesses together, and that they're both what we sort of decided are earn it daily businesses.
You know,
there is no newspaper not coming out. It has to come out. So, and in the same sense in the restaurant business, you know, you can have a spectacular service and everybody goes out there happy and everybody has a great meal, and that's great. You can pat yourself on the back and good job, but tomorrow's tomorrow, and you've got a whole new set of customers coming in tomorrow, and you've got to earn their confidence tomorrow. So for good or bad, you have to tie a bow on at the end of the day and start again fresh the next day.
Well, that's what we're doing right now. The show is over. Jasper Alexander, great job. Good luck with the track this summer, and
Thank you. Great job
at Hattie's. Support comes from Cafe Capriccio, offering dining and catering with Tuscan cuisine in Albany, New York, and Neapolitan cuisine in Saratoga Springs. CafeCapriccio.com for reservations. Subsidium Technologies, a single point of contact for area enterprises to identify telecommunications plans, working to maximize information technology efficiency and employee productivity. SubsidiumTech.com. United Way of Dutchess, Orange Region, sponsoring a confidential helpline accessing by dialing 211 that links people to health and human services for everyday needs, uwdor.org, and Saratoga Jewish Cultural Festival, Saratoga Springs, featuring a series of programs featuring live performances, films, discussions, and more in Saratoga and Warren counties, saratogajewishculturalfestival.org. Thanks again to Jasper Alexander of Hattie's. Thanks to Zach Malloy at the controls. Your phones were answered by Barb King. I'm Ray Graff. Have a great weekend. All right, staff, time for leftovers.